So yesterday we spoke about AI music and songs generated by bots being consumed by real life people. And a lot of you texted in with some really strong thoughts on AI generated art. So we are continuing this conversation today. I want to talk about the backlash against AI generated ads. H&M and Guess, clothing retailers, have been busted using AI in their ads. And now other brands are using the audience's dissatisfaction to their advantage. Heineken, Polaroid, and Cadbury are all boasting that their campaigns are human-made. So has AI uptake already reached a fever pitch and will we now start to see more pushback? And why is one of the first signs companies looking to make a buck? I'm joined by Dr. Paul Harrison, Head of Consumer Behaviour at Deakin University. We chat fortnightly. We call our chat Buyer Beware. Paul, welcome back to Life Matters.
Thanks so much, Tegan.
Why do we care if an ad is AI generated?
Look, I think one of the reasons is because we're human. And to some degree, what ends up happening is that even though people might go advertising, it's just about selling stuff, there is a creative underpinning to that and creativity. And based on, you know, what you were talking about yesterday as well with the Benz and Emery was that creativity comes from experience and emotion and memory and struggle and irony. And even though advertising is ultimately trying to sell us something, it comes from that place. So to some degree, it actually, we do feel a little bit, uncomfortable about the idea that a machine is telling us how to experience an emotion. And people have seen ads that actually have an emotional resonance. And I think that's what's really important when we start to feel like, to some degree, the creative process is being taken out of human hands.
There's definitely ads that evoke an emotional response. Like that's actually a really big button that they push. It's amazing that something that's only 30 seconds long can make you cry. Maybe that's just me. Maybe there's a feeling of being even more manipulated if that's coming from a machine and not another human being.
Yeah, and I think, you know, to some degree when a lot of the research kind of says when people are told that it's made by technology, that they feel a little bit tricked or duped or a bit stupid, it kind of goes to the base of this idea of this sense of competence, this idea of being replaced, this idea that we need to save face. And saving face is a really, really critical part of what it means to be human, because to some degree, people have this, I guess, this internal picture of themselves of who they think they are and who they want to be. And we've talked about this before. And then when something like a technology threatens that, what to some degree happens is that they go, okay, so the person that I thought I was isn't the person that I am. I can't pick up these things. And so we become very uncomfortable and we feel like we're going to be replaced. We feel like to some degree that, you know, that this technology is performing a task that we thought was uniquely human. And so it becomes a very dissonant experience for a lot of people. And I think that's part of what's going on then when we find out that something was AI or not AI, we feel a little bit tricked and we feel this emotional response as much as anything else.
So that was basically what Emery's research. We spoke to Emery Schubert yesterday about, he's a music psychologist, about the emotional response we have to music and the fact that people will hear a piece of music and like it until they find out that it's AI and then they say, oh no, I don't like it. So is it partly maybe because it's new? Like, do you think that once AI is more ingrained in just our day-to-day that we'll feel less of that loss of face?
I think it will become, I mean, to some degree, and this is again, you know, lots of people are saying this, we've been using AI for 30 years or so. It's just what's emerged in the last 2 or 3 years is a more consumer-based product. So ChatGPT and those different kind of large language models, that what they're doing is that they're giving access to people to be able to create, to some degree, you know, artworks and music and all sorts of things. I think the mistake and the concern that we have here is that ultimately any form of creative endeavor, whether it's, you know, broadcasting, whether it's creating advertising, whether it's creating music, comes from people's experience of life. And to some degree, a technology can't really understand. What it can do is it becomes what we always kind of refer to it in education as a stochastic parrot, this idea that it's just repeating back to us what we've already considered and what we already understand. I had this really interesting experience when I was teaching in France earlier this year. And one of the things was I asked these undergraduate students to ask them to use one of these models to explain something complex that is a really kind of key to French culture. And what they realized was that the model was basically translating the French into English, then looking at English ideas of culture, and then slowly kind of translating that mental model back to them. And this is the thing, is that there is a limitation on all of this type of technology in that it's based predominantly around English culture to some degree, that it is based on things that can be digitized, and it is based on things that can be understood in some form of language. And we all know that language is limiting, whether it's when we listen to a piece of music, sometimes people will go, I don't know why it moves me, but like you were saying, I'm crying. Why am I crying? And we can't express that. And I think the creative process, even with advertising, even with an ad, sometimes we just go, why does this make me cry? You know, and it's much deeper than necessarily what a technology will ever be able to understand. It's, you know, to some degree, it's Plato's cave kind of thing. It's chasing shadows rather than fully understanding what's going on outside that cave.
And like you say, if it's only based on a sliver of our culture and society, it's flattening our experience into just that one narrow band.
Yeah, exactly. And what ends up happening then is that it really doesn't give us any sense of serendipity. And I think a really important part of, you know, even living a full life is this idea of, oh, I didn't even expect that. Some of us, again, you know, will be watching something or reading something and will be taken off in a direction that we weren't expecting. And people will, a lot of my colleagues who work in the kind of artificial intelligence area, they say it will get better. But I think to be human is to step into the unknown and to kind of think and act without certainty sometimes, because often that's when we kind of have these moments of, I don't know, excitement and highs and lows. In a way, what we're doing when we use artificial intelligence, even with advertising, and I've seen this in advertising, is that it does flatten it. It basically looks at patterns and it says, this is what most people have responded to most of the time. And when we do modelling of human behaviour in the different areas that I work in, often our models kind of miss out on around 35% of what actually influences people's behavior, because to some degree we don't really know what it is to be human. And I think that's the beauty of trying to understand what works and what doesn't.
You're listening to Life Matters here on ABC Radio National. I'm Tegan Taylor talking to Dr. Paul Harrison for our regular chat, Buyer Beware, all about the way we buy and the way we're marketed to. Talking about AI in advertising, Lisa says, AI might have its advantages in some fields, but I'm already fed up with it intruding on my everyday life. When I'm doing a task on screen, it pops up regularly, asking me questions, breaking my concentration. I prefer to seek information rather than an algorithm trying to preempt my needs. And Greg says, AI-generated ads or production crew-generated ads, what's the difference? Both are manipulative. Paul, we had a lot of furor a decade or two ago over Photoshop use in ads. Is this sort of just an extension of the same gripe?
Yeah, pretty much so. And, you know, to some degree, we're still having the arguments over Photoshop and the use of Photoshop and manipulating people. So I don't think we've resolved that. And maybe we should look back and go, okay, so if we're still struggling with something like Photoshop manipulating how people look, then maybe this is something we need to be thinking about. And, you know, for a lot of it, people still can't tell the difference. You know, people will say, like, this is not a real human body, but our emotional response is to the image, to what we're seeing, and we think that is representative of particular people. And it's exactly right. You know, of course, marketing and artists and everything, they do manipulate us. But I think there's a bigger question here, is not necessarily how we use AI, but why do we actually need to use, and why do we need to use technology? Because ultimately a technology is meant to, I guess, contribute to the human condition. And to some degree, what this is doing is it's kind of supporting itself. And we're in this system now where it basically rewards productivity and efficiency rather than curiosity. And so what ends up happening is that any new technology that comes along, we kind of jump on it because it promises efficiency. But we need to be stopping and slowing down and saying, but how is this helping us to live better lives? And I think that's what's missing, this idea that we just get so excited about saving money and making money that we forget about, ultimately, why are we using this thing? And even in universities, we're not asking those questions. And I think it does need to be asked. I think we need to, from the moment kids start I guess, learning, they need to be asking, well, why are we using this? What's the purpose of this? What is the use of this technology?
Rob on the text line says, it's confronting to have machines take over elements that we hold dearly as human, like creativity and emotions. It leaves us questioning our collective value and place. That, to me, is the most jarring. Well, Paul, thanks as always for joining me. Paul Harrison, Head of Consumer Behaviour at Deakin University. He joins me fortnightly for our segment, Buyer Beware.
Listen to more great stories that take you beyond the headlines. Ask your smart speaker to play ABC RN.